The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. Today is Tuesday, the 25th of August, 2020. I'm Francesca Morgan, and I'll be filling in for Justin, who'll be returning in 2 weeks. Today, I'm speaking with Andrew Knott, CEO of Savannah Energy. He'll be discussing the company's recently published results for the 2019 financial year, its activities in Nigeria and Niger, as well as guidance for the 2020 financial year. And secondly, I'll be speaking with Colin Bird, Executive Chairman of Extract Resources, who'll be touching on the company's latest contractor agreements and subsequently its opportunities presented in Mozambique.
Vox Markets is an online community of investors that runs a free mobile and desktop platform that allows you to track news and updates about any UK listed company, offering RNS push notifications, detailed charts, pricing data, and much more. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app. The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
Joining me today on the podcast is Andrew Knott, Chief Executive Officer of Savannah Energy. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
Of course. Now, just quickly for those investors who are listening but might not necessarily be familiar with Savannah Energy, perhaps you could tell us just a little bit about the company.
Yeah, Savannah Energy, we're an AIM-listed energy company with assets in two countries, Nigeria and Niger, both of which are large, high-quality, high-growth projects. The asset base that we have in Nigeria is significantly cash flow generative, and we've announced significant improvements in the performance of the assets since we acquired them in November last year. And in Niger, we have a very large area of land under license. We've made 5 exploration discoveries. We have clear plans to bring them on stream, and then an awful lot more exploration activity to pursue. So that's our company. We are a cash flow generative, strongly performing oil and gas business in Nigeria, and then in Niger we are an exploration led business.
That's great. Now, you recently published results for the 2019 financial year. As I understand it, this also includes around 6 weeks of operations in Nigeria since acquiring the assets in November. What is significant about these results?
Okay, well, look, I think there's two things we've done. We published the 2019 results, but we've also published an update in terms of the performance we've seen in the first half of 2020.
Sure.
So, I mean, I think at a high level, in terms of when we started the process of the acquisition, the Nigerian assets were doing about 14,000 barrels a day. We've now got them up to, in the first half of the year, doing 19.6. So that's a 40% increase in production. On a cash collected basis, we've also similarly increased cash collections by about 37%. So that's a very, very significant turnaround in the underlying performance of the business. What that's meant is that we are in a position where we can give guidance for the full year for 2020, whereby we expect our revenues to be more than $200 million, our production to be between 21 and 23,000 barrels of oil equivalent per day on a gross basis. We expect costs to be in the region of $68 to $72 million, and we'll spend about $45 million on capex. So what we're trying to say is that we expect the business to generate significant cash flows. And I think what is quite important is that in the challenging times that we've been in, we've managed to increase our production volumes at a time when many people in Nigeria and globally have suffered material declines in their production. And that's really a testament to the very hard work that our people have put in terms of trying to deliver these business improvements, which we said we would be able to deliver when we did the deal, but now people were actually able to demonstrate that.
Yeah, and you've previously stated that you're already supplying gas to over 10% of Nigeria's power generation capacity. How do you see this continuing?
Okay, so we currently supply gas to 3 principal customers, a cement factory and 2 power stations. What we said is that one of the attractions of our Nigerian asset base is significantly underutilized on a capacity basis. I.e., there was a lot of money spent, well over $1 billion spent on the asset, but the the current utilization of that asset, depending on whether it's the pipe or the CPF, is about 50% or 25%. So very, very limited utilization. So the marginal cost of adding new customers to the business is extremely low, and the potential upside that can be achieved is significant. It's potentially very high. So we announced the first new customer, which was a third power station customer that the business had signed up in nearly 6 years in January. So within a matter of weeks from completing the acquisition. And we've been very clear that we expect to be able to sign additional customers up over the course of this year. Even with the issues around COVID slowing things down, we still expect to be able to continue to sign up new customers. So our ability to grow our customer base and to grow our margin, we continue to believe in very much. We're doing something which creates tremendous social good, the provision of power, in a country which has very, very high demand growth and a very, very substantial need for that power. And it's just a case of now working our way through the process of doing it. So by the end of the year, we should be connected to up to 15% of Nigeria's power generation capacity, as an example. And what I would say is our annual report is 177 pages. It's a very big document. There's a lot of detail about Nigeria, about Niger, about our businesses, about our business models. There's a lot of interaction with core stakeholders, governmental stakeholders. There's an awful lot about the sustainable development and how we approach sustainability, the social projects we've invested in, and this and the social good our projects are providing to our host countries. So there's an awful lot of information in the annual report. I think it's much more comprehensive than many annual reports you will see.
Now, just touching on the fact that you said that you'll continue to integrate the Nigerian assets with a specific focus on sustainability and group-wide ESG performance, if you like, how will you do this?
So we're very lucky in that the Nigerian business that we had already was already largely reporting to IFC, so the World Bank Performance Standards, and there's a lot of information on that. So given who the previous owners of the assets were, there was already an awful lot of sustainability was firmly embedded in the culture of the business that we acquired.
Mm.
Project that we have in Niger, so our other business, that project is contributing to a wider project which should increase that country's GDP by about 24-25%. So again, it's another very significant project. It's part of a very significant project for the country. And Savannah's always operated to the highest ethical standards. So from an ESG perspective, there's a lot in this report, and every year going forward, we expect to supplement it with further information. But I think we're very comfortable and very confident in the sustainable nature and the social good that our business is doing.
Mm. Okay, so you see your projects as having a positive impact in both of the countries they're operating in. Are there any other ways that you view the assets as having transformed the company, or any other new ways that it will transform the company?
Okay, so look, so the assets that we have, if we take the Nigerian business, okay, which is the newer asset package, we now are a full cycle energy company that is capable and is operating assets from the exploration phase all the way through to the cash flow generation phase. We have a very significant organization and a very, very clear corporate culture, which means that from an operational readiness and capability perspective, we have an ability to assess and take on new projects from a very, very, very solid base. Clearly, the cash generation transforms the business as well. We now generate significant cash flows, and we have significant relationships associated with those cash flows in terms of our investors and our lending syndicate. In Niger, the transformation really comes from the fact that we have a business where the finding cost is approximately or less than $2 a barrel. We think the value of the oil that can be found is up to $6 a barrel. 80% of wells that have been drilled in the basin that we operate in which we have nearly 50% under license, have proven to be successful. And we are in a position where our wells, we've had 100% success rate. And our ability to link up to existing infrastructure to monetize that is very, very high. And it's really, that's a In terms of future transformation, a key focus now is on getting those Niger discoveries on stream and starting to generate cash flow from them. So we'd be generating cash in both Nigeria and Niger, with ultimately a view to commencing a progressive shareholder distribution policy.
Mm. And do you see, obviously you've kind of just touched on this, but do you see any further growth opportunities either in both of these two countries or even outside?
Okay, so the growth is relatively straightforward. So in Nigeria, it's about you've got an asset which is underutilized, and it's about increasing that utilization. So adding in new customers at hopefully an ever-increasing price. One of the key things is our gas is generally displacing diesel as a source of power. So it's a much cheaper, more secure source of power than diesel, which is typically very expensive and intermittent. And there's stuff on the internet, on our slide decks, that shows the cost comparison between the two.
Mm.
In terms of Niger, and as I said, the financial gearing is very high because most of the costs have already been spent. In Niger, it's about bringing on stream the R3 East development, which is the five discoveries that we've made to date, and then also at finding new oil and tying that back in and developing that. And then outside of that, any business development that we did would be very much focused around assets which are cash flow generative and capable of enabling us to accelerate our plans for shareholder redistributions. The oil and gas industry is in a unique place just now. There's a whole lot of assets for sale that are very high quality, and there's not a lot of buyers, especially in the emerging world. So there will be opportunity there, but we've got enough just to focus on in Nigeria and Niger and our existing asset base to generate a lot of value over the course of the coming months and years. And you'll see that, you'll see the director's confidence with the announcements in terms of the transactions this morning, whereby four of the directors acquired a significant amount of new shares.
That's great, Andrew. Thank you so much. I feel like you've touched on everything there. Just to close off, could you give our audience members three reasons to add Savannah Energy to their Vox Markets watch list?
Well, I think firstly, the fundamental quality of the assets that we have. Both of the assets that we have are very low risk technically and of a very large scale, uncommon for a company of our size. So I think the quality of the asset base, I think, is very, very important. And the management team's experience around developing assets like this. And if you look at our track record, what we've done, the financial performance of when we've done things, our ability to get things done to budget, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That's all proven through the history of our company. Then you look at the individual growth opportunities. So in Nigeria, it's this whole very, very strong gearing that we have to signing up additional customers and an increase in price dynamic. And then in Niger, it's all about the quality of the assets, the repeatability of the exploration success, both for us and for others that have been in the basin, and then the significant upside that can come from bringing the R3 East development on stream. So really, it's the quality of the assets, and then it's the strong growth opportunities in both of our core projects, the Nigerian project and the Niger project.
Right. Thank you so much for coming on, Andrew.
Thank you.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
Joining me today on the podcast is Colin Bird, Executive Chairman of Extract Resources. Thank you for coming on, Colin.
Thank you for inviting me. Pleasure.
No worries. Now, to start off, could you tell us a little bit about Extract Resources just to familiarise our listeners to begin with?
Extract Resources is quoted on the AIM market. Its foundation, if you like, is the Manica Gold District of Mozambique, where we have alluvial operations at the moment and made various announcements about primary rock, hard rock and semi-hard rock, deals with contractors. We've actually moved into as well into Zambia, where we've got an exploration project called Eureka, where we've drilled holes and we're now currently modelling the place and getting ready to drill again. We've got the Kalengwa copper project, which was a very high-grade project, and behind old mining in the 70s and 80s, I left significant dumps, most significant being 2 million tonnes of very homogeneous material, hex tailings, flotation tailings, 2 million tonnes at 1%. Look forward to working those in the not-too-distant future. And we announced, I don't know if time flies, about 3 months ago, we announced our acquisition of the Bushranger project in Australia, around about 200 kilometres due west of Sydney. It's a huge porphyry. It already has, York 2012, 71 million tonnes at around about 0.45, 0.6% copper. Currently waiting Australian state approval, national approval to foreign investment. And then we all systems go on drilling it. It's open-ended on strike, open-ended on depth. We have an additional porphyry not very far away. And we have three epithermal gold deposits that we're going to be looking at in and around the same district. And there's been some good discoveries with those epithermals of late. The Bush Range project is optioned to Anglo-American Corporation. First right of refusal against certain parameters. So that in a nutshell, sorry, it's a big nutshell, is the extract resource portfolio.
That's fine. And you've had some news out this morning that your Mozambican subsidiary, Explorator, is that how I say it?
Explorator
has concluded another mining contractor agreement. Could you tell us a bit more about this?
That's right. When I took the company over some time ago, we decided that we would subcontract the alluvials. That's been very successful. Within its parameters and within the risk of alluvial mining. I say risk, not as will it happen, won't it happen, but more in the difficulties in determining what the grade is of the gravels that you're working and how deep is the overburden. But in, I think, 2.5 years, the project has never failed to make a surplus of income over expenditure. So that's been okay. And we signed and announced last year a deal with a contractor to come in and mine the deposit, finance the deposit. We would have a 23% interest in the operating cash flow. That project should have been going now, but it's been delayed because of coronavirus. Shouldn't have been delayed other than the fact that some of the biggest parts, long lead items, are down in South Africa. South Africa has had a nasty bout of coronavirus, as you know. So that locked up the materials and locked up the equipment. But, you know, we haven't let the grass grow under our feet. There's been work on tailings dams, work on foundations. And so we reckon we're 4-5 months at the most. We'll be up and running once we get the equipment through the border. We've always recognised that, you know, that main project, Fairbride, with an accompanying project, which we call Dots Loc, there are little satellite deposits, which we intend to work in due course. Their sort of attraction is the fact that they're hard rock, they're not alluvial, but they lend themselves to pre-milling processing equipment. So we decided, and I announced, and on a similar channel to this, that we were actually going to pursue the same model as the alluvials and the same model as the hard rock, and job these out, if you like, subcontract them out to suitable groups. And we've been, since that, we've been looking at companies, looking at their operations, reviewing their performance, and picking the optimum group to work with. Last week, we announced that we're working our Guyport project, which is not insignificant at all. You know, I mean, we're talking about satellites. It's got 1.1 million in resource tons. But, as I said in my statement and interviews, it's also got a million tons of in a big lens, up to a million tons in a big lens, which could make it a 2 million deposit. And today's announcement concerned another place called Boa Esperança. And Boa Esperança has been the subject of very light drilling, but nonetheless, four drill holes have intersected all. Now, the operator that we brought in, they're very good at sinking adits, and adit being an access to the ore bodies, and then selectively mining. So that means mining no more width than the actual ore body itself. And so this is very, very effective on maximizing the grade and minimizing the tonnage that you're treating. And the Chinese are very good at it, and of course the Westerners are as well. We've been doing it for years. And these mines are very difficult to quantify what it determines in terms of tons and grades, but they can go on for a lot longer than the fundamentals suggest from a drilling program. And Borex has got veins, so the Chinese method will be to get down there, as would be our method, identify the veins, open them up, follow the main veins, and of course if they get satellite diversions, shoots as we call them, follow those shoots, and it can be very productive in terms of gold. And as I say, not very wasteful at all by mining non-paid material. It's the very fact that it's only been drilled with four boreholes, that's fine. The veins are discernible on surface. And we look forward to getting nice tonnage at nice grades. So in reality, what have we got at Manica? We've got now, we've got the hard rock with Fairbride and Dark Slope. That's going to be opened up and getting going. And I'm optimistic for 100 kilograms a month. Do your own sums, but generally the margins are about 40% on operations like this. Work out 23% of the total, and you know, you get to some, choose your own gold price, and you get to somewhere near the expectations. These operations that we announced, Guy Fawkes last week and Borex Brancher, should be nice little earners. And again, the Chinese and you know, our discussions with our contractors are that we'll basically, if especially Guy Fawkes, if we get the right indications, we'll make the plant larger. Borex Brancher is immediate and should be in production just as fast with its own processing plant. So there's just one left now, and that's a nearby concession that we own, which has alluvials on it. It'll be relatively short life, 6 months to a year, but nonetheless, we'll add to the cash flow during the formative period of building the plant. Guy Fawkes and, of course, Borex Brancher are just not fillings. There seems to be a misunderstanding that we're talking about very small-scale fillings. We're not. When Fairbride's up and running, we're looking for 6 years. There's no reason to believe that Guy Fawkes won't last as long as the main project. And Borex Brancher, your guess is as good as mine. Once we get into those veins, we'll know how long they're going to work. They're very exciting, difficult to put together. As always, you've got to do your own work on who you're working with, and they have to do their own work on us. Of course, it's not a one-way process. And finally, we've got to a deal, and the Chinese, the contractors, they're starting already doing the mining in order to have sufficient material in front of the processing plant when it starts up in hopefully 2 months. So that's the broad story: increasing production and contributing to all of the other things that we're doing in the group.
Great. Yeah, you've touched on pretty much every facet there. So do you see any other further growth opportunities that you may have not mentioned for either, you know, the company or its subsidiary?
I think Exploranza is pretty well defined. When you talk about growth potential, you've hit it on the nose, because integral in the to the hard rock agreement is we divert some of the cash flow to exploration in the region. I've got a great geologist, Ed Slowey. And went out there a couple of times, and he said, "Well, I can't believe it. There's all golds all over the place, different styles of mineralization. Really, is an interesting conundrum, this Manica." And he's absolutely right. There's not been many holes deeply drilled, so we're diverting some cash flow when we get the main project going into concession and region exploration, because we believe it's quite an animal, and there could well be a deeper seated key source which can put us up into the millionaire ounce bracket. So we're there already, actually. We've got about 1.3 million ounces in burden through the various range of categories. But we believe in the potential to locate and define something quite different, quite bigger. Maybe bigger than ourselves, maybe bigger than our partners. But that's the plan.
That's great, Colin. Since you've touched on everything there, I think just to close off, if you could outline, as you kind of already have done, but just a kind of more concise three reasons to add Extract Resources to their Vox Market watch list, just touching on kind of everything you've just said, but just maybe broken down a little bit.
Well, to say we're a producer and producing gold, which is enjoying favorable prices, and we're developing, we've got a rapidly increasing growth profile, that's one very good reason to hold our shares. Another one is the fact that we've got similar copper operations, which will be developed latter part of this year, early next year, in Zambia. And then, quite frankly, the Bushranger project in Australia with a potential buyout partner in what belongs in the major league is one very good reason to hold Extract shares. So difficult to see why you wouldn't hold Extract shares. And easy to understand that you don't need the old portfolio to come riding past the winning post. Just success in a couple of areas, and this project and its current market cap are massively disconnected.
Wonderful. Thanks so much, Colin, for coming on and explaining that for us.
Kind of you to invite me, and I appreciate you. Thank you very much indeed. My pleasure.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
Now let's go with the most followed companies on the Vox Markets platform. At number five is Anglesey Mining, ticker AYM. Number four is Non-Standard Finance, ticker NSF. Number three is Ektag, ticker EQT. Eurasia Mining is at number two, ticker EUA. And finally, at number one is Supply at Me Capital, ticker SYME. And finally, the most liked RNSs on the platform are Iconic Labs, Issue of Equity and Paydown of Debt. Savannah Energy comes in at number four with an updated company presentation. Melody VR Group, with its acquisition of Rhapsody International, comes in at number three. Extract Resources is at number two with its Manika Gold hard rock mining agreement that we've touched on today. And finally, at number one is Eurasia Mining, ticker EUA, with a project update.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.